It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Maria Bartiromo.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Liz Claman, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, April 1st, 2024. I'm Chris Foster. There are 34 Senate races this year with a few considered toss-ups like Montana.
That is going to be a barn burner of a race because that is the Democrats must win that seat if they want to hold the Senate.
And Lisa Brady. A record number of baby boomers turning 65, and there aren't enough younger workers to fill the vacuum.
Well, you know, I've been talking about this issue for 30 years now, and we knew that this Titanic was headed to this iceberg.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
7 months and change from Election Day. Republicans are trying to hold on to their razor-thin majority in the House and take back the White House and Senate. Democrats have a two-seat majority there, including independents who caucus with them. 23 of the 34 seats up for grabs are currently held by Democrats or independents, so they literally have more to lose. Republican David McCormick is trying to win Bob Casey's seat in Pennsylvania here on Fox Business.
I say, what are your three issues everywhere I go? And when I started, launched the campaign in early October, it was economy border, inflation border, and now it's reversed.
Texas Senate Republican Ted Cruz is up for re-election and tells Fox News Digital.
After Donald Trump, there's no Republican in the country Democrats would rather beat.
For 12 years, he's been an extremist. He's been a right-wing extremist. He's been proud of that.
House Democrat Colin Allred on Fox 7 Austin there trying to flip that seat blue. West Virginia Senate Democrat Joe Manchin says he's not running for re-election.
I think that the West Virginia seat is as close to being in the bank for the Republicans as any seat, possibly in recent memory for sure.
Fox News Decision Desk Director Arnold Mishkin.
I think Jim Justice has a really strong position. There's a little bit of corruption, not corruption so much as sort of issues about the funding for his business. But he can spend a lot of money because he still has a lot of money. The only possible vehicle is supposedly Manchin has been approached by Chuck Schumer saying, would you like to run as an independent?
Okay.
And I imagine Manchin probably feels a little antsy about the fact that he's not going to have a role come January of next year. So maybe he's thinking about that. But other than that, this thing is in the bank.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's kind of a unicorn in that state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he is the last Democrat who could possibly win in that state. Right. That state has become solidly Republican.
Similar-ish story in Montana, another red state in federal elections with a Democrat in the Senate. Republicans are trying to take John Tester's seat. Primaries in June. Who's going after him?
The Tester one is a sort of a more unique animal because there you have another unicorn, John Tester. I mean, John Tester is a Democrat and he votes with the Democratic Party. But on the other hand, he is about as Montana as one can be. And his opponent is a business guy named Tim Sheehy, who's not from Montana and arguably is not the greatest Republican you could possibly have running against someone like John Tester. But on the other hand, he's also got a lot of dough and he can self-fund in a state that doesn't cost that much to self-fund in.
Right.
But that is going to be a barn burner of a race because that is the Democrats must win that seat if they want to hold the Senate. And there's a lot of reasons to think John Tester has some advantages, but I would not put that in the bank for either side right now. But okay. If you put a gun to my head, I'd say John Tester's in deep guacamole, as
right.
they say in Montana.
Really? Okay. Pennsylvania, Democrat incumbent Bob a lot of Democrat incumbents are up this year. Bob Casey's going to be against David McCormick. If you remember, Mehmet Oz beat him in 2022. In that Republican primary, Oz then lost to John Fetterman, but McCormick's back taking on Bob Casey. Better luck this time?
He'll have better luck because he'll be the nominee. I think that the challenge, I think, for McCormick is he's running against Bob Casey. And Bob Casey is about as close to pro-life as you get as a Democrat. He comes from a family that's well-respected in Pennsylvania circles. He's the kind of Democrat that appeals to the sort of the center T of Pennsylvania. The joke about Pennsylvania always is it's got Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle.
See, I always hear Kentucky with that joke, but it's the same joke.
But the point is that Casey is the kind of Democrat who has appeal there. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, McCormick is going to be well-funded because he has a deep pocket. McCormick, unlike Mehmet Oz, is not a resident of New Jersey. On the other hand, he is from a long line of Pennsylvania families who has true ties to the state. On the other hand, I don't get it. I don't get how he's running his campaign because McCormick was doing a bus tour of the state. And every night he took his charter plane and flew back to Connecticut. And I thought, why?
I'm going to live. Yeah, I think he said, I'm going to live on this bus.
Yeah.
A few hours a day. yeah, probably not a great look. Ohio, this Trump endorsed candidate, a businessman, Bernie Marino. He's challenging Democrat Sherrod Brown. Marino's also who Democrats wanted to win this primary.
Yes. I mean, the thing is that the challenge that Republicans need to overcome is they've nominated for the presidency and for the Senate in Ohio two guys with clear MAGA credentials, Make America Great Again, Trump credentials. They had an option of nominating a non-MAGA guy who was the governor's choice, but they chose not to. And so the question is, when you got two MAGA candidates, on the one hand, you're going to really drive up the MAGA vote. And that's important. And that's why Donald Trump won the White House in 2016. It's why he came so close in 2020, because he drove turnout from a lot of people, when a lot of people didn't expect him to. And he is magic in that way. On the other hand, you have a lot of the sort of non-MAGA guys, and they represent about a third of the party. And they're not totally happy with the direction of the party is going in. And so I think that represents a challenge for the Republicans in Ohio. The second challenge you have in Ohio is everyone agrees that Donald Trump is going to win Ohio over Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Biden has a lot of money. A lot compared to Trump right now. And they're going to pick a state, and I suspect it's going to be Ohio, where they just force Trump to spend time and spend money. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be Ohio. I think that's going to help Sherrod Brown. On the other hand, it's a tough race for Sherrod Brown.
That's interesting. So the Biden campaign wants to try to essentially waste as much of Trump's time as they can.
Yeah.
In a state that he's probably going to win anyway.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and who knows? I mean, how things could change.
Michigan, open seat. First time in a while, years, that the seat's been open. Democrat Debbie Stabenow is leaving. Primary's not till August. We know a lot about the race so far.
I think the primary is not in August, but we know that Alyssa Slotkin is probably going to be the Democratic nominee. We don't know who the Republican nominee is going to be, but there are a number of former congressmen with very clear sort of non-MAGA credentials, people like Peter Mayer or Jordan Amash. And that's going to be – I mean, I think everyone thinks this is a lean Democratic seat, that Alyssa Slotkin should win it. On the other hand – Michigan is ground zero, if you will, for the challenges that the Democrats have over over Biden's support or for Israel and the Israel-Gaza war. You have a large Arab community. And so it's possible that could hurt Alyssa Slotkin because historically the Arab vote it's about 1%, but historically it's been pro-Democratic. And if they lose that, that could be the difference in victory and defeat.
Arizona, this is Kirsten Sinema's seat. She's leaving, technically an independent, but another potential pickup, let's call it, for the Republicans. Carrie Lake's in that primary. She lost her race for governor in 2022, says it was stolen. Now she's trying to win a Senate seat instead.
I mean, let's put it this way. Kirsten Sinema was the perfect candidate for Arizona. Mm-hmm. She is a moderate Democrat or a moderate. She was planning to run as an independent. The Democrats are probably nominating Ruben Gallego, who is a progressive Democrat. Actually, not the right kind of Democrat for Arizona because he's really probably too progressive. On the other hand, it looks likely that the Republicans are nominating Carrie Lake, who's actually not the right kind of Republican for Arizona because she's too MAGA,
right.
And she does not hide her MAGA cred. In a sense, neither party is nominating the perfect candidate. And the question is going to be which party is nominating the weaker candidate. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Texas, you say that race might be interesting. Ted Cruz is trying to keep his job. A lot of people like Ted Cruz. A lot of people don't like Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, This is a state where, I mean, a lot of people don't like Ted Cruz, but Ted Cruz does have MAGA cred. He's made some mistakes. And he had that problem with his vacation in Cancun in the midst of a horrible storm in Texas. On the other hand, he has real MAGA cred, and I think that's going to be really helpful in terms of driving turnout in the Hill area of Texas. Also, Texas is sort of ground zero for where Hispanics are sort of losing interest in the Democrats and moving away. And so that's really helpful to Ted Cruz. On the other hand, the Democrats have nominated a really solid candidate, former NFL player, congressman, and Allred, and he, you know, he's an impressive guy. So if, I mean, you can see a scenario where Ted Cruz gets a scare of his life again, which is what happened last time. I don't see a scenario where he definitely necessarily loses, but I do see a scenario where the race becomes interesting. And it's also very, really dependent on what happens in the presidential race in terms of Trump. Because, you know, Texas is going to go for Trump, but Texas is not going to go for Trump as strongly as it ought to.
Got it. Yeah, and Colin Allred's obviously going to be sucking in money from outside as much as possible.
Yeah, Cruz is a wonderful way for a Democrat to raise money. I'm running against Ted Cruz. Oh, I don't care what your name is. All right.
Just how about the House? Conventional wisdom that the Republicans probably win it back. Just the numbers. Am I wrong?
I mean...
Or are you against convention? Or are you just going against the grain here?
Well, no. I think the conventional wisdom is going to be a close House race because there's so few seats that are really up for grabs. On the other hand, the challenge, if it's a nationalized race, the challenge is that the Republicans, you know, sort of, you control the House now. What have you done for me? Hmm. What you've done for me is that given me some entertainment. In terms of like getting rid of one speaker, threatening another speaker, almost shutting down the government, but not going all the way. So nationally, the Republicans, I think, have a challenge to explain what it is they've done in charge of the House. But when you look race by race, the problem is there are so few competitive seats. The way the map has been drawn, it's not clear how either side doesn't make a race out of it.
Donald Trump, obviously, in the polls is very close to or ahead of President Biden. Is his support just the same supporters he always had, or is he picking people up along the way?
What I've seen is that basically people who support Donald Trump support Donald Trump. And it doesn't matter who you put up against them. They're always voting for Donald Trump. That's what we saw in the Republican primaries. I think it's not clear that Donald Trump is picking up support, and that's a challenge for him. On the other hand, you know, Joe Biden is going to gaffe at some point between now and then, and that's not going to be helpful to Joe Biden, and that could be helpful to Donald Trump. And on the other hand, we have a lot of these situations in the world on the presidential level, and by situations in the world, I mean particularly what's going on in Israel and Gaza, what's going on in Ukraine and Europe. And Joe Biden is either going to be – and his fingerprints are all over those things. And so he's either going to be seen as having been successful or as having been – crotchety and elderly. And I think that's what's going to decide this election more than Donald Trump and whether or not Biden actually gets the non-Trump vote or not.
Because Trump's people are ride or die. He's going to get what he gets. And so the election is, in a way, Biden's to win or lose.
Precisely. Yes.
Arnon Mishkin, Fox News Decision Desk Director. Arnon, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
I'm Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent and New York Times bestselling author. Join me for my brand new podcast, Searching for Heroes. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
A wave is coming. Not red or blue, but silver, as a record number of Americans hit retirement age. More than 4 million baby boomers turning 65 this year, with similar numbers expected through 2027, in a report from the Alliance for Lifetime Income. Though not everyone retires at 65, some may need or want to work longer or hope to finish sooner.
I think that's a little too long, especially when you start working at such a young age. I think that most, if not many, haven't adequately saved and prepared for it.
Which brings us to Social Security, the safety net sending checks to more than 60 million Americans, most of them retired workers. But under current projections, benefit reductions could begin by 2034 if nothing changes.
The president doesn't have a plan. He has principles.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says President Biden wants to work with Congress on ways to extend solvency. He accuses Republicans of wanting to cut Social Security and Medicare.
If the president wishes to work with Congress, why does he continually demagogue Republicans on anything that doesn't exactly line up to what apparently suits his reelection?
Louisiana Republican Senator Bill Cassidy pushing back at a recent Finance Committee hearing. The debate about entitlement programs is not new, but it may get some added pressure from the silver surge, which can have a variety of economic impacts, especially when younger generations aren't having as many babies.
Well, I just literally turned 64 a couple of weeks ago, so I'm a boomer. I'm one of the last boomers, so this means, you know, that the entire baby boom generation is now in retirement age.
Heritage Foundation economist Stephen Moore is also an economic advisor to the Trump campaign.
You're talking about the biggest cohort in history, so that's a lot of people that will be in retirement. Now, what we've seen in recent trends is that people are starting to retire at an earlier age, and that one implication of this in terms of the financial situation is we'll have a lot more people on Social Security, a lot more people on Medicare, and fewer people paying into the system, so that's going to cause some real financial stress.
Yeah, that was actually my very next question. How much of a strain does that put on the system? Maybe we do each one of these separately. You know, let's start with Social Security. Sure. I mean, obviously, you know, do we even have enough younger workers coming in as a country to replace the older ones who are retiring, just in terms of Social Security?
Well, you know, I've been talking about this issue for 30 years now, and we knew that this Titanic was headed to this iceberg. You know, it was predictable that the baby boomers were going to retire and that we would have a problem with not enough young people to support the older people, especially given, by the way, that life expectancy is higher now than it's ever been. And many people my age will live into their 80s, 90s, maybe even to 100 years old. So that's a lot of years that they'll be collecting government benefits. Shame on Congress and shame on Washington for not doing something about this until we're on the, you know, verge of a crisis. There's going to have to be some way to increase the number of people in the labor force, or perhaps encourage people to retire at a later stage in their life. And by the way, just as a point of view of health, the studies are pretty clear that people who work longer in their life actually live longer. So early retirement is not necessarily a good thing for your health if you want longevity. So there's many steps that we can take to deal with this Social Security issue, one of which is to increase immigration. Now I'm talking about illegal immigration, people who come in the legal channels, because they come in, tend to come in when they're young, and they come in when they're of working age. So we have what I call a demographic safety valve that we can bring in, you know, younger people. Most other countries don't have that option. We're one of the few countries in the world where people want to immigrate too.
What about the impact on Medicare, which is something that also cost the government, you know, money in essence? I mean, 65 is the age when you're supposed to start enrolling, right? I didn't even realize there was a late penalty.
So Medicare has two problems. Okay, so one of the problems is just the same one that we're talking about, that we just have fewer young people supporting the system as a percentage of the population. But the other problem is that healthcare costs are exploding. So you know, the idea that we solved this problem with the so-called Affordable Care Act, that didn't happen. In fact, healthcare is expensive now as ever before. And so you've got a dual problem, exploding costs of healthcare and a lot more people getting healthcare. And I don't see any way out. I think we are going to reform. We're going to have to reform the Medicare program. We're going to have to find ways to eliminate the waste and the fraud. You know, hundreds of billions of dollars are stolen from the Medicare system, and fraudsters take advantage of the program. And you've got, you know, oftentimes insurance companies are defrauding the system, and so are, in some cases, hospitals and doctors. So that would be a good way to start
by reducing the amount of red ink these programs are facing in the years and decades to come.
What about the overall infrastructure of the healthcare system? Are we ready for this, older population, so many people coming into that, over 65 age bracket and potentially living for another 20 years? Can we support that in terms of just having the facilities necessary?
Of hospitals, right. Well, now is not a bad time to go into the nursing home business because, we're going to need a lot more hospitals. We're going to need a lot more, nursing home beds. And as people live longer, they're also living more in assisted care facilities. If you turn on Fox News or the radio, or you hear a lot of advertisements for, assisted living centers, because there's so many people in their 70s and 80s that are entering those kind of facilities. So I think we can probably start building those now to make sure that we have enough space for all of the people, in my generation that are getting older.
And people living longer in general is a big deal financially, not just for them, but, for the rest of their families too, for their kids and their families. How should they be planning for that potentially?
Well, there's this new problem that a lot of middle-aged people are facing, that they have to take care of their kids and their parents. And so that is a financial stress for people in their 30s and 40s and 50s right now. So this is the consequence of having a declining birth rate. And I'll just say this, if you think we've got problems, almost every other advanced country has bigger problems than we do, because their birth rates have fallen a lot more. And the irony of this whole system is that, when I was growing up in the 1960s, everybody was talking about the population bomb, and that everybody, we had to stop having kids because, the planet couldn't sustain all people on the planet. And now we have the exact problem in almost every country, where there are not enough kids to support the system. And so one solution, it's going to take a while for this solution to work, is for young people to have more children.
How are baby boomers faring economically compared to past generations? I mean, do they have more money saved, for instance?
Yeah, this is going to be one of the wealthiest generations ever. And so, because if you think about it, there's tens and tens of trillions of dollars of assets over the next 30 years that are going to pass from one generation to the next. Now, some of those are the ones that are younger than the baby boomers, but we do have incredible wealth in this country. We have financial wealth and also material and natural resource wealth. So, we can handle this problem. There's no doubt. I mean, it's not like we're going to go broke as a country, but the government has to come up with some solutions to be able to pay its bills. And what's kind of scary right now is that we're already running $1.5 to $2 trillion deficits already. And these systems that we're talking about, Medicare and Social Security, aren't even in the red yet. Now they're going to be very soon. And so we better figure out how we can cut expenditures or grow the economy to deal with this ticking time bomb of an older population.
What about housing? And I ask that in part because there's already an issue with existing homeowners not selling homes because they don't want to lose the lower interest rates that they have locked in right now. What about this new wave of retirees if they do or don't, decide to sell their homes?
Well, first of all, it's pretty clear where the retirees are going to go, right? They're going to Florida. They're going to the Carolinas. They're going to Arizona, in states like that. So you're going to see a huge increase in the, and we've already been seeing that over the last decade or two, but it's going to accelerate as we see more and more people move to, warmer retirement areas. So just in terms of the where the population of the country is going to change a lot. And that's why, try to buy a house now in Florida. I mean, the prices are just through the roof because everybody, as they retire, wants to move there. Same thing with states like Arizona. So I think it's going to really change the dynamics of where Americans live. And the population centers are going to be places like, West Palm Beach and Tampa and Phoenix and Tempe and places like that, because retirees like to live in warmer weather places. So that's going to be one of the real changes that's coming. It's already started, but it's going to come even more so over the next 10 or 15 years.
in a lot of ways, 65 is not what it used to be. It's not. Definitely a much younger age, you could say, than it used to be. Could we see an economic boon in certain areas, in certain industries, for example?
Well, you may raise a really important point. Not only are Americans living longer, but more importantly, we're living healthier at every age. So, as I said, I just turned 64. You know, what's the saying? 64 is the new 44. So, you know, that's a good thing that Americans will be healthy. And, you know, and so that means that maybe we'll not have so many medical problems with. But eventually, we all get old and we all die. So, but it's amazing. I mean, if you go to some of these retirement communities, you see 80 and 85 year olds out playing pickleball and doing yoga. And so, that's really important that people try to retain and maintain their health. And, you know, the medical procedures are so much better. We can keep people alive longer. And those are all positive things.
Stephen Moore, Heritage Foundation economist, also economic advisor to the Trump campaign. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Take everything with a grain of salt. It's April Fool's Day. Some historians have linked its origins with the proximity to the vernal equinox, the first day of spring, when Mother Nature fools people with unpredictable weather. Tuesday, a historic Las Vegas casino closes its doors. The Tropicana, which opened in 1957, will officially begin preparations for demolition, making way for the new home of the Oakland Athletics. Wednesday, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals will hear arguments concerning Texas SB 4. The law, currently on hold, allows Texas law enforcement to arrest and charge migrants suspected of illegally crossing the border into the Lone Star State. They argue that gives them the tools needed to deal with the border crisis. The Biden administration says the law is unconstitutional and conflicts with federal immigration policy. Friday, the March jobs report will be released, giving economists a better read on unemployment figures and the strength of the nation's economy. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Tom Graham, Fox News.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
It would seem New York City is more committed to pizza policing than actual policing. Restaurants with wood and coal-fired stoves are required to reduce emissions by 75% in an effort to supposedly secure climate justice and cleaner air. The filtration systems required to be in compliance can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So what a slap in the face to already struggling business owners in the city. New York City leaders are worried about clean air? Really? I find that hard to believe given the widespread stench of pot smoke that doesn't seem to concern them, really, at all. Is it really a wonder businesses are flocking to great free states? Free the pizza! I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.